Rain Hamcast number 64, running time is 16 minutes 30 seconds. The ID break is at 6 minutes 22 seconds. The timer reset breaks are at 3, 38, 6, 22, 9, 26, 12, 21, 15, 19. Rain Hamcast number 64 will begin in 3, 2, 1. This is Rain Hamcast podcast number 64 for April 2nd, 2022. He built a better mousetrap. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. What were you doing when you turned 20? Tony Berg, K9ASB, was delivering pizzas in the Chicago area. Not a very promising future doing that. Little did he or anyone else realize that 16 years later, Tony would sell a multi-million dollar antenna company he had a hand in its short-lived success in the northwest Chicago suburbs. Rain's Hapali, KC9RP, got the story behind Antennex from Tony earlier this year.
It all started with a man named George Hannes, ex-Motorola engineer at the time. Whiskey 9 Bravo Whiskey, W9BW, I believe, when I started at Maxrad Incorporated that was owned by George Hannes. He had a small antenna company in Rosemont at the time. I was delivering pizzas for a living the summer of 1982, and my dad wasn't so sure delivering pizzas would be a good living for me. He had hoped I'd get a regular job. He had a friend, another ham, Val DeMar. He's passed away now. His call was K9RF, Kilo 9 radio frequency. He was working for George at the time as an engineer developing antenna products, and they needed help assembling antenna products. So one day, Al appeared at my doorstep, or actually in my backyard during the day because I was working at night, so I was off during the day. He walked up to me and said, "Hey," my dad was in the backyard too. He said, "Hey, do you want a real job?" And I said, "Sure." I was invited to go interview with George, and it went well. And for $5 an hour, I was able to start shipping antenna products and assembling antenna products for George. The years ensued, and we were doing real well as a company, shipping products all over the country, all over the world. Grew very rapidly in the first couple of years I was there. Grew so much that we needed to expand and get a new building. And George Hannes proceeded to find some property in Elk Grove Village, built a 5,000 square foot building for us to build our antenna products in. So we moved there in 1984. I worked there till about 86 when George was diagnosed with cancer, and it was terminal. And it was a very sad thing because he was sort of a mentor to me, taught me how to build antenna products, how to market them, how to take care of the customer and deal with the customer, etc. He finally did pass away in, I believe, October of 87, at which point he left the company in the hands of a trust with the Harris Bank. And there was trustees involved, but he left running the day-to-day operations to his nephew. His name was Don Sislow. He was not a ham. Don and I had become pretty good friends in the prior years while George was suffering with cancer. Don took care of his uncle. It was actually his uncle. Yeah, I said it was his nephew. So he took care of his uncle while he was fighting cancer and all the while trying to learned how to run the business. George taught him all he knew. Don brought me up with him. The two of us and some other key people proceeded to run the company after George had passed away for some 2 years. We doubled revenue every year for the 3 years that we ran it. But the trust was very difficult to deal with. They wouldn't allow us to expand as we needed. We were bursting at the seams in the building we had built some 3 years prior. Needed more space, needed to expand the building. The building was designed such that we could do that, the non-load-bearing wall in the back, that we could just expand another 5,000 square feet, and the board wouldn't let us do it. So we proceeded to get satellite factory places, and at one point we had two other factories running alongside the original factory. So we had three factories in Elk Grove Village building antenna products, selling some $15 million a year in revenue. Maybe closer to 17. It was at that point we became so frustrated with the board that Don wrote a Dear John letter to the board and said, "Hey, listen, if you're not going to do it our way, we're just going to go into competition with you." And that was all it took. The following day, the board sent the authorities into the building, escorted Don out of the building, took away his company car, and made him walk home. I think Don maybe had a choice to get a ride, but I think he decided to walk home just on principle. But anyway, as he was walking home, he was deciding what to name the new company, how to start it. Prior to him writing that letter, we had had several discussions about if this comes to a head, what are you going to do? And I told him, whatever you do, I want to do. So it was just the two of us after he was escorted out of the building. In the third week of June of 1990, I decided to quit. That was some 2 weeks after he was escorted out. I quit and joined Don. And we proceeded to start looking for factory space. We found one 2,500 square foot space in Wheat Lane in Wooddale. We started to build our company. Got a dry erase board and thought, what can we do to differentiate ourselves from the other company and what can we do to compete with them? After much consternation and buying a lot of workbenches, spent 2 weeks assembling workbenches so we could build product.
You're listening to the story of a self-made man whose work ethic and ingenuity help him build a better mousetrap called Antennix. We'll bring you our final moments with Tony in a moment. This is Rain Hamcast podcast number 64 for April 2nd, 2022. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Rain Hamcast on therainreport.com and on the Rain Report page on YouTube.
We then proceeded to go with our first differentiation, which was the all-brass butterfly mount, or the all-brass NMO mount, which at the time was a novel material because prior to that, Motorola had made them out of leadloy. Leadloy and the butterfly part, because of the nature of the material, had a tendency to rust, and that rust would cause a lot of problems in pursuit vehicles, police cars, rental cars, or taxis, where the rust would seep through and start to rust around the opening of the antenna mount. And that was a real problem, and Motorola was trying to figure out how to solve that. They wanted to go with a non-ferrous material, but the non-ferrous material brass, in its regular configuration, is too soft. The butterfly wings would bend when you tighten the brass ring on the mount. So what we found was an alloy of brass that was a little harder, but yet had all the non-ferrous qualities, would not rust. So we were the first to market with the all-brass NMO mount. And with that, we were able to secure a really nice order from Tesco, major wireless distributor for their private line product, thousands and thousands of them. We proceeded to then hire one person to help assemble mounts. One person could make about 100 an hour, and we had a little over 10,000 on order. We put all our money into buying the parts. We got the parts in and let loose our new employee to build mounts. And we proceeded to ship and start invoicing and realizing some revenue. And it was at that point, we finally wiped our brow a little bit, said, we got some sales. Now we got to get some more products. And then we started out with the quarter wave antenna. Our differentiation there was a gold-plated all-brass contact at the bottom, as opposed to a curly Q that was the flavor of the day. And that worked much better, better power transfer, a cleaner contact, etc. That differentiated us, and we were able to sell lots of quarter waves. And then we realized revenue from that. We were able to take that revenue and pour it into the development of what we called the B-coil antenna product, or the base-loaded 5/8 wave VHF antenna, which was very popular, 144 to 174 megahertz for the pursuit vehicles, police cars, taxi cabs, etc. It was always about differentiation. We always wanted to do something different. Otherwise, how could we justify someone buying ours? When we designed the base for our antenna base, we designed it such that we could ultrasonically weld it together as opposed to the screwing and gluing that Maxrad was doing. So we ultrasonically welded the housing together for a far more durable, far more water-resistant housing that was very impervious to weather and shock absorption, etc. It was a better product, and we also had a gold-plated contact in the bottom. Maxrad didn't. We had an O-ring seal in the bottom of the brass ring in the base, so that sealed out water. We also had a removable and tunable ferrule on the top that had some distance to it so you could move the rod up and down. It didn't have to be so perfect with tuning. So there was a couple of improvements over the competitor's product in our product. And we were able to lean on those things to sell lots of them. And once we started selling those, well, then the horse was out of the gates and we started developing base station products. And every product we designed was an effort at improving what was already out there and doing something different that nobody else did. Another example was when Maxrad was making base station products, they would make them out of PVC housings and just a plain aluminum base for mounting sleeve. What we came up with is a gold anodized mounting sleeve and a all fiberglass enclosed housing that was secured together with high-tech epoxy adhesive. Then we came out with Yagi products, base station products, that were fully welded and fully anodized, which the competitor could not match. And not only did we do all these improvements to the products, but we sold them at the same or better price. As a matter of fact, our prices were set up so distributors could make more with our product than they could with the Maxrad product. They could make more with it, sell the same, and have a better product for their customer. How could they argue with that? We were off and running with basically improving what was already out there, doing a little better, and attracting customers that we had already had relationships with at the old company, attracting them to our product with our improvements. Not just on relationships, but actually on real grassroots improvements to the product.
You were building a better mousetrap.
You could say that because you can really call antennas mousetrap. They're pretty much the same no matter where you go. It's just an antenna radiator with some connection to the coax and a connection to the radio. It's pretty simple stuff. But it was just a matter of doing something a little better so that we could get people to notice us. And it seemed to work. After that, we grew at a rapid pace and we started out in Wheat Lane with 2,500 square feet. In 1992, we moved to Glendale Heights, got 5,000 square feet there. That place was AT&T, so it was a really nice fit. One technological company after another. Their phone system was all set up really nice, so it was really easy for me to wire up a new system. But anyway, we proceeded to go like gangbusters in the early 90s. And at one point, we were experiencing world-class growth, doubling every 3 years. And it was very, very challenging, very difficult. And as we grew, we expanded into spaces next to us. The building was called One Glendale Center, 100,000 square foot building with many tenants in it. And we started out with 5,000. Ended up with about 18,000 square feet when we're done. Well, then here we come into the late 90s, 2000s, expanding, growing. The rest of it is kind of blurry. I got to tell you, Hap, it was quite an experience. At about 2004 or so, Don had some personal things going on in his life where he really needed to exit the business. So we decided to market the business to the best taker. And we found one in 2006. We closed on the business in March, and it was Laird Products. Laird Products or Laird Electronics or something out of Great Britain came in and swooped up a bunch of antenna companies in the U.S. that was part of what they were doing at the time, and we were one of them, along with Centurion Products, who made rubber duckies, and they bought Cushcraft too. At that point, Don exited the business, and I stayed on for about 6 months until I decided that the corporate life wasn't for me and decided to quit it too. So it was October of 2006. I was done.
Did you take the Antennex name with you?
No, actually, they bought the brand and they proceeded to kill it. And that's the history of Antennex. Leaving out some detail there, that's pretty much my history of 16 years with the company.
If you had it to do it all over again, would you?
You ask a really, really good question there. Today, yeah, because my kids are raised, they're practically out of college and the house is paid for and I'm in a better position in life. When I was in my mid-20s, when we started this whole thing, I had none of that. No kids, no wife, no house, no nothing. It was easy to take the plunge. If I had thought about it again 10 years ago, I don't think I could have ever done it because it would have been too scary. Now that things have changed a little bit, yeah, I would do it again. It was a wonderful experience, fantastic learning experience. I learned a whole ton about business and relationships, sales, marketing, engineering. My last capacity there was running the engineering team and also driving the patented products, which were key to getting our business sold too. Our intellectual property was what they were after. A big example of that was the Phantom antenna. That was a gee whiz product that nobody had that could put the entire radiator inside of a small housing, the radiator being wrapped around a circuit board. And we were able to leverage that intellectual property for the sale of the company. Not only that intellectual property, but about seven other industrial patents along with one design patent.
And that concludes an enlightening look at where a good work ethic and ingenuity will take you. Thanks to Tony Berg, K9ASB, the driving force and fertile mind behind Antennex, a short-lived Chicago company that made a name for itself back in the 90s by building a better mousetrap, or rather, a better mobile antenna setup, thanks largely to Tony's efforts. You can catch Tony these days in the Northwest Chicago burbs on the 145.23 MHz Schaumburg Amateur Radio Club 2-meter repeater in Schaumburg, Illinois. Hap Holly, KC9RP, edits and produces this biweekly ham radio hamcast without monetization. Your support and feedback are welcome on the RainReport.com. Rain Hamcast number 65 will post April 16th, 2022. Copyright 1985, 2022, Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. All rights are reserved. Rain programming is made available under a Creative Commons license. You are encouraged to download, share, post, and transmit these Rain hamcasts in their entirety via amateur radio. YouTube assistance from Tom Shimizu, N9JDI. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. Keep on hamming.